somehow Oregon is still standing in this tournament. 8:30, they'll face off against the 2 seed. USC just smothered OSU. He's the fine play-by-play man calling the action for KTLA. 7:10 in Southern California. Spent time here as the voice of the Eugene M's. Always great to welcome back Chris Fisher. Chris, how are you?
Here we go. Las Vegas, Pac-12 tournament. I mean, good to go. Ready for these two teams to get back at it. They played some really good games this year, and I would expect nothing different here tonight. Nothing different.
You know, it's been kind of an interesting season because, for folks who aren't aware, before it began, the Trojans were seen as the primary challenger to Arizona. They had a 3-game losing streak in the non-conference, a 3-game losing streak in the Pac-12 season. So while the path has not run what you would call true to form, the bottom line is, for those of you close to the program, you kind of expected him to be here in this picture for the conference, right in the picture for going back to the big dance.
Well, when you look at the teams now that are in the semifinal, it's the teams that were expected to finish in the top four in the preseason poll. You had Arizona, USC, UCLA, and Oregon. They were the teams that were expected to be here in the very end. It has been the furthest thing from a direct line for both USC and Oregon. I mean, this has been, and I'm just a broadcaster here, and I can only imagine what it's like for the players, but it has just been such an emotional roller coaster for so many different reasons, literally since the news broke initially with the FBI back in August. Winning streaks, losing streaks, injuries, having DeAnthony Melton expected to come back, not having him come back, losing Benny Boatwright to a knee injury, learning how to coach these guys. I mean, it has just been one thing after another, and if there's one thing that USC is, it's interesting, Steve. They are interesting. Not always for the right reasons, but it's been an interesting season, and the crazy thing is, yes, they are where we all thought they would be. They were expected to finish second in the conference. They earned the number 2 seed, and here they are in the semifinals. And Oregon is right there with them.
Yeah, let's call it a unique path. You mentioned Benny Boatwright, and ironically, he got hurt in the Oregon game 3 weeks ago. He'd missed a couple games. With Benny out, what does USC lose? I mean, he did a lot, versatile player, and who kind of picks up the slack?
Well, the identity of the team takes a sort of different form when he's not out on the floor. The good news for USC is, he's missed some time. He missed a bunch of games last year, missed 17 games, and they were able to play through it. So it wasn't this big, unfamiliar territory where it's like, oh, my God, we lost Benny. What are we going to do? No, they just needed to kind of adjust things with their starting lineup, and that was inserting Nick Rakosevic. Now, things are totally different with Nick on the floor because Nick can only be a 5. He can't go out on the perimeter and be a 4 like Benny was. And that's why Benny was such a tough matchup, is because he could play out on the perimeter, he could defend the perimeter, and obviously he could shoot the basketball, which is the furthest thing from Nick's game. Benny allowed USC to become really dynamic when he was really good, but he was more bad than he was good this year. And he just never found his rhythm and tried to shoot his way out of it as the season went on, and never did. But without him now, they've been able to find some steadiness in their rotations. Guys know their roles. It's a tighter rotation, and guys know what's expected of them at what point of the game. And I think it if you're looking at the positive, it certainly helped out the Trojans in just everybody knowing what their roles are going to be for the rest of the season and settling into them, which they have here over the last couple of weeks.
You know, I want to talk about Andy Enfield, who came over after that amazing Dunk City run. You know, he had a lot to deal with. They only won 11 and 12 games the first 2 years. And now, well, I think USC is going to a third consecutive tournament for just the second time in program history. Chris, you get to see him up close and personal. What would you say are the traits that have allowed him to, turn this around pretty quickly and, made USC a player again?
Well, I mean, just like anything else, it comes down to recruiting and the players that you put on the court. And we've talked a lot about it this year in just how important it was for them to get Jordan McLaughlin, because he was the first. and the first is always the most important when there's a guy who has other options, really. And J-Mac could have gone to Kansas. He could have gone to Arizona. He had the option to go to a better program when USC was really in the basement, and he was a Southern California kid and wanted to stay with a Southern California team. So he was kind of the first, and then after that, you know, Chemezi followed and Benny followed. And then all of a sudden, you know, USC starts racking up a couple more wins, and then, you know, you get to the NCAA tournament, and then one thing leads to another. So it obviously comes down to the players that you put on the court. J-Mac was the first. They recruited very well. They've been able to develop some of the players who needed development to improve on their shots, and it's resulted in wins. I mean, they are going to literally put together more wins in a three-year stretch than any period in USC history, a history that's not, you know, sparkling like UCLA's, but it's a history that's been there, and it's something that these coaches and players should be proud of.
You know, as kind of a follow-up, I mean, I look at this staff, and I've done some reading. Josh Hart, a Southern California native, played at Syracuse. Chris Capco has got connections in the Deep South. Martin Bahar worked at Georgetown, worked at Princeton. It just seems like it's a really well-rounded, really connected group of assistants he's put together.
No doubt about it. And even going before that, I mean, Tony Bland, who's obviously not with the program anymore, but he was a big part of recruiting as well with his ties in Southern California and his time at San Diego State. Him and Jason Hart were so deeply entrenched in the talent pool in Southern California that, you know, you've got to have good assistants this day and age to compete. And you've got to have people that are well-connected. And you know, Jason was a coach for a while, and he's involved in the AAU programs and all that kind of stuff. So that's how you get a gem like DeAnthony Melton to come and play at USC that he didn't have another D1 scholarship offer, and he was one of the best freshmen in the Pac-12 last year. And then you throw in other guys like Chris Capco, and he's got the ties in Florida, which is how USC was able to land Elijah Weaver, who is going to be their point guard coming into next season from Florida. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, these guys certainly have their ties around the country, and they've got the credibility, which is what you need, and the players that trust them, that want to commit to them. And when you have that, you know you're going to get better players, and when you get better players, you're going to get better results.
Talking USC hoops with the voice of the Trojans, Chris Fisher. I want to get to a guy you mentioned, their senior, Jordan McLaughlin, who aside from three blowouts, I mean, he plays 35 minutes a night. You know, I look at him and I watch a lot of USC basketball. Accurate to say, he's the kind of player who sometimes you just got to watch the game and look past the box score to understand what he contributes.
Well, he has done so much for this team. And there's kind of two different J-Macs. There's unselfish J-Mac, which I think is what you're talking
yep.
about more, Steve, where
yep.
you can't put sort of a price on what he's creating out there and the opportunities that he's creating for his teammates. I mean, he's averaging over 7 assists a game, which is one of the tops in the country. I think it's 4th in the NCAA. I mean, 7 assists a game, you look at it and you're like, oh, yeah, what's the big deal? That is a big deal in college basketball. There's not a ton of guys that are putting up those kind of numbers. I mean, he was going 11 assists back-to-back games. That just doesn't happen all that often. It happens when you have a really skilled player who's been around the block and has seen everything and is now a senior, and the game is extremely slow for him, and he knows where all of his teammates are supposed to be and where the ball should be at any given point. But there's also the scoring J-Mac, and the scoring J-Mac is a totally different player, and he can get dynamic at times like he did earlier this season against Vanderbilt. And I think that USC needs him to be sort of a blend of both. He's got a tendency of being one or the other. But if he's scoring, USC needs his scoring. And they also need his distributing to get the other guys involved. So the more balanced that he is, the better it is for USC.
A couple final thoughts for USC's play-by-play man, Chris Fisher. You know, there's been the Boatwright injury. We've talked about McLaughlin, you know, obviously the attention. Metu warrants. But Elijah Stewart, who's now a senior, he's really been an important rise, part of this rise of the program under Enfield. It seems like he sometimes maybe flies under the radar a bit, but another guy who's just such a vital contributor.
Well, if there's one thing that Elijah has been throughout his career, Steve, it's been reliable. He just passed, for the most games played ever in a USC uniform. I mean, that's what you get for 4 years. He's a senior now. He's never missed a game. And he has been a major part of Andy Enfield's rotation for 4 years. That's reliability. Now, at the same time, he has produced. And how has he produced? Well, he set the all-time school's record for most career threes made. That's what will happen when you're an outside shooter and you don't miss a game throughout your career. Now, we asked him flat out, did you expect that to happen when you came to USC? And he said, no, absolutely not. I mean, he just it wasn't part of his goal set when he first arrived on campus, but it's something that he did. It's something that he accomplished. And the thing about Elijah is he can be – like he was last night, not very good. 1 for 6 from the floor.
Right.
Or he can blow up for 28 and 30 points, and he's been a really really big contributor in big games. He hit the game-winning shot against SMU last year, a huge three to put USC ahead. So there's just nothing that these guys haven't seen at this point in their careers in playing the amount of games that they played in NCAA tournaments and Pac-12 tournaments. So if there's something that they can take with them, it's certainly experience.
And lastly, USC obviously taking rounds 1 and 2, two unbelievable games, like you said earlier. The Ducks probably don't even deserve to be where they are now. So what's the word in talking with the guys today or at practice about the kind of, I guess, desperate Oregon team they're going to face tonight in Vegas?
You know, it's kind of interesting in just doing the research on Oregon and how the Ducks have sort of won these games because they were dead on arrival. After I couldn't believe they lost to Washington State. And, it's desperation from seniors that don't want to essentially end their season, I guess you could say, or end this tournament. You had Elijah Brown last night stepping up and knocking down some big shots. You had Mikal McIntosh making some big plays down the stretch. These guys are playing with some serious senior desperation. I don't think there's any other way to put it. And, when you got nothing to lose, it becomes really easy to kind of play a sort of a freestyle. So that's going to be one thing to keep in mind. And then for USC, they've been playing with pressure for the last couple of weeks, probably going back to the Oregon game at Galen Center a couple weeks ago when the backs were against the wall for them, knowing that they'd come off a three-game losing streak and needed some wins to boost that resume to get in the NCAA tournament. And they've kind of been playing with that mentality now for the last couple of weeks. They parlayed it into a four-game winning streak. And if they let down their guard one bit tonight, USC can lose this game really easily because the games that they did beat against Oregon this year, both very tight. So it's a matchup that I'm expecting to kind of in a script that I'm expecting to play similarly to the first two.
Yeah, I have a feeling we're going to be down to the wire, and it's going to be a matter of a stop or a shot made, and you could witness another dandy. I know you got a lot of stuff going on, and Chris, we always appreciate you taking the time to chat and provide your insight and information. Travel safe back to SoCal, and as always, we look forward to catching up soon.
Sounds good, Steve. Anytime. We'll talk next year.
You got it. Take it easy, Chris.